Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Welcome to Stacked. I'm Elise Ryan, and I'm really excited to have you here today for an episode of Power, Passion, and Purpose. Today, Dr. Rachel Goldman is here. She is a nationally recognized clinical psychologist, author, speaker, and consultant who takes a holistic approach to health. A leading expert in cognitive behavioral therapy, she specializes in stress reduction, disordered eating, health behavior change, and the treatment of obesity. Dr. Rachel is also a clinical assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry at NYU Grossman School of Medicine and runs a private practice in New York City. Dr. Rachel is a sought-after speaker and media expert with appearances on national platforms including Time Magazine, The New York Times, CNN, and USA Today. She has shared the stage with Oprah, spoken at Reese Witherspoon's Shine Away event, and has been featured on the prominent podcasts such as the Mel Robbins podcast. She has also served as a consultant for the film The Whale and is a frequent guest on Sirius XM Doctor Radio. Recognized with the 2023 Distinguished Behavioral Health Provider Award from ASMBS, she is also a mental health coalition champion and was named one of Women's Health Magazine's most inspiring women to follow. And that I know is true. She has been recognized as a top mental health influencer, CBT influencer, and stress management influencer for the past 3 years. Passionate about making mental health tools accessible, Dr. Rachel is the author of the book we're going to be talking about today, When Life Happens, recently released April 2026. I pre-ordered and I have my copy, which reflects her mission to help people manage stress, build confidence, and create meaningful change in their lives. Widely regarded as a trusted voice, she empowers individuals to build their own mental health toolbox and live healthier, happier lives. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. And, you know, it's funny when you say author of, it still doesn't feel real. So I was like, oh, right, I did write a book. So thank you. It's always nice to kind of hear that, you know?
Yeah, it does. And when I say author, if you're not following her, you need to follow all her social media, because I have been following her. I just said to her before we started the podcast, I'm following you when I'm exhausted. You're all over the country and everybody's embracing you in this fabulous book. And I just want to hold the book up because I do have it and I have things bookmarked and I have pages and notes all over my table. We only have about an hour, a little under for this. So it's going to take a few podcasts to get through, but life doesn't come with a script. And when it doesn't go as planned, what do we do next? And that's why we have you here today with this fabulous, fabulous book, Dr. Rachel. I'm so excited. You know, we met a few weeks ago, I think it was maybe less than a month ago, at a mutual friend, Deb Belfato's Let's Talk Woman, fabulous woman's event. And she said to me, you got to go meet Dr. Rachel. You got to go meet Dr. Rachel. And you were next to our other mutual friend, Megan Murphy. And yeah, you're both doing your books. And it was so exciting. And I couldn't wait to get home or pre-order the book. But I was just watching your face that day. And please tell me, and tell all of us, what inspired you to do When Life Happens, this beautiful book.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And I remember that day like it was yesterday, even though it wasn't that long ago. And I do remember you coming up to meet me and to talk to Megan. And it was really such a joy to meet you. So thank you. And now for following up and having me here, of course. Years ago when I was in graduate school, everybody's like, yeah, I'm going to go into research. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to do this. And it was kind of on the list of things that maybe I would do one day. And fast forward, a quote that I often say that is not my quote, but it's in my book, is that a goal without a plan is just a wish. So looking back, this book was truly just a wish until it became more than that, right? So, you know, looking back at all my years of clinical work, I actually remember when I was working in the hospital, which was from about 2011 to 2016, and I saw thousands of patients when I worked at the hospital. And I remember, you know, one patient leaving, one patient coming, the door opening, a patient leaving, the door closing, so forth, and thinking to myself, wow, I keep seeing such similar patterns. And patients keep coming back saying, wow, I, you know, don't feel like I changed much, but I feel so different. And this kind of started planting the seed of like, wow, everybody knows what they should be doing, but it's really hard to take that step and something is keeping them stuck. And then they would come into my office and like I said, they would come back the next week and I would be like, well, it's not brain science what I told them. Like, you know, what was it? And I started to realize it was literally a few things, but truly listening and hearing the person in front of you and also providing steps that really are breaking down the things that are overwhelming and keeping people stuck to the teeniest little thing that they could just start doing today. And I was like, wow, like if I could say this to one patient at a time and it's helping all these patients, why can't I say it to everyone to start helping people feel better? And really that's why then I created my Instagram account. And then I was like, okay, I got to get like a billboard. I got to do something. And I decided, you know, to write a book because so many people were coming to me asking for book recommendations and I have them, but I was like, I love this book, but, and I just realized if I can put all of that in a book, especially for people that are, you know, coming to me and like on my wait list, you know, I can't see everybody, you know, like why not at least get started? Right? It's not a substitute for therapy by any means, but why not get started with some of these basic tools that I really thought people knew, but people don't really know.
So that was one thing that I want to share with all of you. It's about a toolbox, and I was really excited to have you on here today to fill our toolbox because myself and so many need some tools. You know, I needed a tool this morning at 7 a.m. because I had a podcast. I had to ship jewelry and we're packing to leave Florida and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay. And then I remember something you said, breathe and take it.
And as you were saying that, I took a breath. I'm like, oh my gosh, if I was running around like crazy, I would just take a breath.
And that's what I'm doing right now. Yeah. I took a breath before the podcast. I love that. And that was the one thing that started my toolbox. Do you have any other suggestions?
Yeah. So I love that question. Although I don't think people love my response because what's important is to put tools in your toolbox that you actually see yourself using. So I could provide lots of ideas and examples of tools, but if you don't see yourself doing it or at least trying it, it's not going to work. But I love that you mentioned the breathing one because at least one of the... So what I tend to recommend is to put at least three tools in your toolbox. At least one of those three should be something internal that you don't need anybody else for or anything else for, which is like a breathing exercise. The other ones, you know, can be internal or external. And I like people to think about what do I actually see myself doing when I feel stressed or overwhelmed or kind of feeling stuck. For some people, I would recommend movement to be in there. That could be like sitting on the floor and stretching, or it could be taking a walk or going to the gym. It doesn't really matter. Other ones can be to lean on friends, to talk through things or support. Other things can be, you know, really anything. It can be cooking, cleaning, whatever it is that allows you to kind of reset. And then also other tools that I present in the book, which are a little more cognitive behavioral therapy, is like reframing your unhelpful thoughts and things like that as well.
So in your mind, like, what does when life happens really mean? Like when you thought of the title of this book?
Yeah. So it's funny. I had two titles or say like statements in a way saved in my brain or in my phone for several years now. One of them was training for life and one of them was life happens. And they're both related. So I always say life happens. So much that when I went to the hospital, a client actually made me a t-shirt that said life happens, because when people came back to my office and would be like, oh, I didn't do what you recommended to do, or I didn't do that homework assignment, like going to the gym X amount of times, I would go, that's okay. Life happened. Let's talk about it. What got in the way of you doing it? It was life, but what specifically? This was just too challenging, and that's okay. And it's not an excuse, but life is going to happen. Now, the training for life part was, I'm a runner. And years ago, I was kind of always running and like training for a race. And one day somebody said, what are you training for? Because I was still going out for like, say, a 6 mile run on the weekend. And I said, I'm training for life for when life happens. And what I meant was, I want to have a base mileage that if I want to run a half marathon in 3 or 4 weeks, I can. And to set myself up to be as healthy as I can physically, emotionally, nutritionally, that if whatever gets thrown my way, maybe it's a half marathon, maybe it's pregnancy, you know, whatever it is, maybe stressors, that I would be able to handle it the best that I can, knowing that there's always things out of our control. So that's the idea, that life is going to get, life is happening. We're going to get those curveballs. We're going to get those stressors. And how are we going to handle it? How are we going to navigate it when kind of the unexpected happens?
I love that. And I love that you have your, am I understanding that we the toolbox you can fill, but we kind of have to fill it ourselves with what works for us, correct?
Correct. So, and the acknowledgement that your tools can change. I think that's really important to acknowledge, because you know, we want to get away from this rigid thinking and have more flexible thinking, more of a growth mindset. And I, you know, I want people to understand that the tools that maybe you worked for you in the past may not work now. And I often hear women especially say things like, well, what I used to do isn't working. Why not? Right? Well, life has changed. We have evolved. Life has evolved. And what we were using before may not work any longer. So I think having that flexible mindset is important, that if it's not working, get rid of it and try something new.
It's almost like you say, a mindset you talk about that's all the time. So it's almost shifting the mindset and filling your toolbox differently for each time of life, that the stage of life. Is that correct?
Yeah, like each stage of life or each phase of life that you're in. And knowing that sometimes you need more than one tool. So for instance, you know, if I'm having a really stressful day and I don't know, maybe my husband comes home and wants to talk about something, I might be like, I need a minute. Like, let me go breathe or let me go take a walk first. And then let's talk about it. Right. So sometimes you need a combination of tools, and that's also okay.
You know what? I love this conversation. And I know that my listeners, the people that listen to Stacked, are so many of them were so excited to hear you're coming on. And, you know, I've heard you speak at all different, you know, whether it's podcasts or on Oprah's stage and Mel's podcast, all these different things. But each time that I hear you talk, there's a little nugget that we get different in the way you phrase things. And that's what I love about you. You add so much to the toolboxes, and that's exactly what you're doing here. I wanted to ask you, you know, how do we shift? So why, when someone says, why is this happening to me? Why is something happening to me? And, you know, and how do we shift it to be more empowering of ourselves?
Yeah. It's funny because I recently was talking about that, on something else. And I don't think I spoke about it previously. But so oftentimes, you know, our brain does go to the, why is this happening to me, right? Like either what's wrong with me or why is this happening to me? And what I like to explain is the automatic thought that's going to happen or the emotion that's going to happen after that automatic thought is okay, but it's how long we sit in it, right? So if your automatic thought is, why is this happening to me? There's nothing wrong with you. We all have these unhelpful thoughts. But what I like to think of it then is pause. Is this helpful? Is it helpful to be like, why me? Probably not. Why do we know that? Because it doesn't feel good and we're not getting answers, right? Like nobody can really answer that right now. So instead we could shift it to, okay, this is happening, fact. And this is the growth mindset. And what can I do about it right now? And that taking action, that question of what can I do, actually gives us back control, which is extremely empowering. And then when we take action, it actually decreases anxiety and those overwhelming feelings. I have clients week after week that will come to me with stressful events, anxiety-provoking situations. And it's funny because now they know. And they'll be like, oh, but I'm feeling better now. And I'm like, why do you think that is? And they're like, because I took action. Like once we have a plan and we start taking action, all of a sudden, it doesn't feel like it's completely out of our control anymore.
Yeah.
But if we sit here in our thoughts, why me? Why me? Why me? That's just, we're going to be stuck. And that why me is going to start downward, negatively spiraling into thoughts that are just in a way snowballing, right? Like overgeneralization, all these really unhelpful thoughts, jumping to conclusions, all these should statements, I should have done this instead, I should have done that before, which is all living in the past. But if it's like, and what's in my control? This is happening, and what can I do about it now? We are taking back that control.
And a lot of people I know right now are going through some, you know, friends of mine, some difficult times. And, you know, when we talk about this, a lot of times the conversation is there's nothing I can do about it. It's just out of my control. There's nothing I can do about it. And we said, that's like a safe line for us to say, but I know that you have to work and navigate through it.
Yeah. And there's always something we can do, right? There are things that are out of our control in life. And actually in the book, I have a diagram of, I think it's like two circles, and the inside circle is like things that are in our control, and the outside are things out of our control. Like, you know, like daily stressors, the weather, traffic, out of our control, other people's reactions, other people's responses, out of our control. Our thoughts, I put it as like, actually, I don't even know. I don't remember if I put it in as in control or out of control, but they're a little bit of both, because we have automatic thoughts, but then we can do something about that thought and tweak it. But how we respond, how we act, or if we react versus respond, is in our control. There is always something we can do. Even by having that thought, what can we do? Well, we can tweak the thought. We can make the thought more grounded and more neutral. It doesn't have to be the complete opposite, like, oh, this didn't happen to me. Like, that's not going to be helpful if it's unrealistic. But it's, well, now that it happened, now what can I do?
And that's where everyone gets stuck. And that's where your knowledge is helping so many of us, because, you know, I personally had a situation where I was stuck, and I start reading the book, and I'm like hitting myself in the head, like, listen to her, listen to Dr. Rachel, because you're not stuck. You're not stuck. You can navigate through this. And I think when you're younger, you're not really sure, you don't have any tools. And that's the important thing. As you're older, things and the different stages of life, everything changes. So it's just figuring it all out, really. And thank you so much for all this great advice.
Of course. And you're right. It is just figuring it out. Like something I often say is, I make it work, right? Or right. Like, we'll see. Like, I don't have all the answers, but I don't know. Which is very different than like, no, that's not going to work out, or no, I can't do that, right? Again, that's the fixed mindset versus the growth mindset, which is leaving the door open for opportunity, or like, I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try, right? Like even writing this book, I literally used all of my tools to write the book, to put the book out in the world. Did I know it was going to be successful? I don't know. No, you don't know, right? Like, but you try. Like I knew I wanted to get my messages out there. So I'm going to do the best I can. And then whatever happens, happens.
Right.
And that just, it's a different mindset than being like, you know, I can't do it. Or what if it doesn't succeed? Or what if this, what if that? I don't know. I don't have control over that. I don't have a crystal ball that can predict the future.
Right. And there's one thing I know I've read. One of the chapters was about, and when you said it, you triggered something in me about, wasn't the right time to write the book, but, and then all of a sudden it was the right time. And we talk about this a lot on Stacked about, you know, the right time to do something. And, you know, sometimes it's really not the right time, but if you keep putting it off and putting it off, you're never going to do it. And I know you have children and, you know, it's never going to be easy, but if you want to do something, you need to put your mind and set your mindset to do it, or you're never going to do it. And that's what I love that you said. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you brought that up because that's my making it work. And I think I first started saying that probably when I was pregnant with my first. I was going to say when I had my first, but it actually went back to when I was pregnant. Because, you know, you always get these comments like, oh, your life's going to change so much. Are you still going to do this? Are you still going to do that? And I was like, no, like, we're going to make it work. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But if I want to keep doing what I'm doing, I'll make it work. And a great example of that actually is I remember when my son was little, and then again, when my daughter was little, I have two kids. I remember being like, I need to get outside. Like, I need to move my body. And I'd be like, you know what? It's nap time. Okay, no big deal. I put the baby in the stroller. I go take a walk. Like, that would be me making it work. For some mothers, and I'm not saying what's right or wrong, this is what worked for me. For some mothers, they would be very rigid and be like, nope, it's nap time. The baby's got to sleep in the crib. That's okay. That works for them. This is what worked for me. And I remember being like, what do I need right now? And what does the child need right now? And is it going to harm them to go on this afternoon stroll in the city outside? No. Or at least I didn't, you know, like there was no evidence that it would. So I knew that that's what I needed at the time. And that's me making it work.
Yeah.
Or even writing this book. You know, yeah, everyone's like, oh my gosh, you have two young kids. What did you do? And I remember I said from the very beginning, I was going to try my best to not write during nights and weekends. And successfully, I could say that I didn't unless I wasn't home. Like if I was traveling, like, you know, I did. I was like, took advantage of being in a hotel and writing. But and that's how I made it work. I literally wrote the book in between all of the moments, like in between the in-betweens. So like in between seeing clients, in between the drop off and pickup, in between the nap times, I just made it work because I was determined that I wanted to do this.
Right.
And that's where I think, you know, we have to know what's a priority to us. And for me, it wasn't doing the book or having children. It was like, all right, when the time feels right, I don't need to neglect them. I can make it work in a way that fits for our life. Obviously, I have a very supportive, you know, husband, family that is, you know, helped make it work too. I don't want to ignore that I think asking for help is also important and leaning on those people. But it's about having that mindset of being like, I don't know, we'll see. And if it's important to me, I'm going to figure out a way to do it. Just sometimes we have to be creative with the way that we're going to do it.
And I relate to you. I'm older than you, and I think back because my daughters are 33 and 30, and I started a jewelry company like that, and I just work between bedtime and naps and trunk shows and this. And if you want something bad enough, you figure it out. It's not easy, but exactly. You figure it out.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting because you and I both have a growth mindset.
Yes.
A lot of people who really feel stuck and don't know what to do are so overwhelmed that they're not thinking kind of outside that box,
right?
They're like, no, I can't see it any other way. It just can't happen. Or I have to wait until XYZ to make it happen. And oftentimes what we need is just kind of, if we think of an onion, like pull back the layers of the onion. Where can you start today? Like just take that one teeny little step and you're going to see you can actually make it work too.
Yeah.
That's great advice. I really, really love this. And for those of you that are stuck, you know, when you read the book, hopefully you will be unstuck. And we're going to take a break here. And I'm really excited what the next topic. I need this topic. So I'm really excited. We'll be right back.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
And we're back with Stacked with Elise Ryan and Dr. Rachel Goldman. And we're talking about so many wonderful topics and her new book, When Life Happens. It's out and it's fabulous and she's on tour and it's a book that you should carry with you no matter when. It should be on your desk every day when you're having a moment. All you do is open your book and you have some answers. That's for sure. That's my new thing on my desk. But I'm really excited to talk to you about this next chapter. It's something that we're talking about body image, weight loss, and self-acceptance. I've heard you speak about this a lot, but I have you here in the house, so I get to ask you the things that I want to ask. But, you know, it's something that has been a part of my life since after my children. Okay, I've struggled since after my children. I never had a weight issue my entire youth, and ever since I had children, it's been a struggle. I mean, I don't know. It definitely affects my life every day. And I was at a lunch yesterday, and I was listening to you when you go to a lunch with a bunch of ladies, and we're all in our 50s, 60s, 70s, and everybody. I was just kind of listening. Oh, I love that outfit. Oh, you look so good. And oh, this it was. And this goes on, as you know, every day of our life. But with everything going on out there with the GLPs and everything, there's so much to cover with this, but I definitely am guilty. I struggle with body image. I wear my black shirt. You wear your pink suit. And so let's talk about that. Can you guide us a little bit? Let's start first with what's going on with the GLPs. And then go on to why we feel this way about ourselves.
Yeah. So how much time do we have? No,
we're going to do a condensed version. I promise Dr. Rachel, she can come back in a few months.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. But there's just so much to say about this, right? So, I mean, everybody now, I feel like, knows what GLP-1s are and these medications that are out there. Whereas, you know, 3-4 years ago, when I first started talking about them, you know, they weren't as mainstream, so to say. And I think it's complicating the world and complicating for society and individuals, because what we are seeing is, you know, a lot of individuals, I think, on these medications, some who they're indicated for and some that they are not indicated for. There's a lot of people microdosing the medications. So, you know, that also makes it quite complicated. So what we're seeing, like if we think about social media for a second, or media in general, I don't really like to say it this way, but it's a fact. You know, we're kind of seeing these shrinking bodies, right? And I think that was a headline at one point, which is why I tend to use it. But it makes it complicated because as humans, we compare. It's a fact. We all do it. It is the way our brain is wired, and it actually compares for survival reasons. So our brains are wired for survival. Our brains like to scan for threats and then to be prepared for whatever threat may come our way. And comparison is a way to kind of do that. It's like if we think back to our ancestors, et cetera, like hunting and gathering in the woods, you have to be comparing in a way like, oh, what weapons do they have to survive? What weapons should I get to survive, right? You almost have to be like one up to be prepared for survival. So our brains are wired that way. The difference is today's threats are a little bit different than those threats from so many years ago. Today's threats are, you know, the more the social comparison, who's getting the job interview, who's getting the promotion, you know, whose body is changing, I guess, so to say, things like that. So it's normal to compare, but I like to think of it as, what are you doing with that comparison, right? Like if you are already having a low body image day or having a stressful emotional day or feeling tired, and you see something that is going to trigger something in your brain that's going to tell you, oh, something's wrong with you because you see everybody else doing whatever. What just happened was you're viewing the world from like a stress lens as opposed to the real lens. And you're going to be looking at yourself differently and looking at yourself harsher than you typically would, like if you weren't stressed or emotional. So it gets so nuanced and so complicated in so many ways. What was that? Sorry.
No, I said, I agree. It's complicated. And, you know, it's like you see somebody who just, okay, I'm guilty. I see somebody who shrunk 50 pounds and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I want to do that. I want to look like that. I mean, that's me. I'm very honest here. I definitely have issues with that. But but I'm happy for them because
it's so complicated. And it's also complicated because, and I'll never forget this. I actually said this. I want to say the first time I spoke on stage with Oprah in 2023 that I had said, you know, it gets even more complicated because obesity is a medical disease. We don't really know who has obesity and who doesn't, but it is a disease that has an appearance focus to it, right? Like part of the disease is having excess body fat. That's a fact. But not everybody with excess body fat has the disease of obesity. And not everybody in a smaller body doesn't have the disease of obesity, especially with these medications, right? I have clients who are now in a normal body shape and size, doesn't have excess body fat, and you wouldn't know, but they have the disease of obesity. But that's where it now gets complicated because we see when bodies are changing. Right. You know, you would notice if I showed up with blonde hair tomorrow, maybe you would say something, maybe you wouldn't, but people notice appearance changes. And then we don't really take the moment to think, I wonder what's going on, right?
Right.
So like we don't see high blood pressure. We don't see hypertension. We might see some of the comorbid conditions like obesity, or we might hear, oh, I have really poor sleep because they have sleep apnea, but we don't see those. So we don't question whether you're on hypertensive medication, right? But with obesity or diabetes or because of an individual's body size, people are starting to notice and they're making comments. So it's so complicated because it is a disease. It's a disease that you can kind of see. It's part of the equation. And then it's, what do you do with that information?
It's so complicated. And I listen to you and Oprah, and I listen to Oprah do different podcasts and so many other ones. And here's, there's so many friends who have done it. And I haven't seen them in months. All of a sudden, I'm like, is that you? Okay. And all of a sudden I look and their whole personality has changed. They are so happy. They're wearing the clothes they want. They're smiling. They're confident. So it's complicated. Like you say, I think it
is complicated, right? And what people don't realize is, you know, for the individuals that this medication is indicated for instance, my clients who have struggled for years, they literally were doing everything that we've been told for years to do. You know, they eat less, they move more, they get a dietitian, they get the therapist, get it all. And nothing was working. And then they go on the medication. And this is not for everybody, but then they go on the medication, my clients. And the way I like to think of it as all of a sudden they became hopeful when they lost hope. Because now they still did all those behaviors. They're still working with me. They're still working with the dietitian. And they're now seeing results. And when I say results, I don't just mean weight loss. Their sleep is improving. Their energy is improving. Their mood is improving. I mean, their quality of life has improved. Again, this is not everybody. We do know that there's some non-responders, people that are not, you know, seeing this response or as successful. We also know that these medications are working to lower the food noise. I like to think of it as quieting the food noise. So that food noise, now we have a term for it. We've actually described it for years, but now we just have a term. So it's a little easier to talk about it. But it's the intrusive, obsessive thoughts related to food and eating. And if that's quieter, people can actually enjoy their meals. They can enjoy their day. They can focus more at work. They can now do the cognitive behavioral therapy and the work that I do with them in a way that they're not, like their brain is present now, as opposed to what am I eating? Did I eat enough? When's my next meal? All these things. So this is why I believe it. And there is evidence that's showing it also, that it is improving people's quality of life and not just because of weight loss. It's actually doing other things to the body, the brain, the mindset, building confidence, because now they're also seeing that, oh, wow, I could put the work in and be successful also. So there's so much.
There's so much. We could talk for days and days. But I'm all for people feeling better if they do it healthy and they can feel better. And Listen, I've seen it life-changing for people. I'm not a doctor, and I don't know anything, you know, deep down about this, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on this. And so many women tie their self-worth to their weight and their appearance. And a couple of my friends were like that for a long time, and they've been in this, and they're thin now. And I see such a difference. Why do women do that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I honestly blame society for it. You know, we've been fed all of these messages for all these years. I mean, I'm thinking back to, I have a stack of magazines next to me. It's what I'm looking at, but I'm thinking back to the magazines, right? And what we see on TV and, you know, just the beauty standards that we see and the beauty trends. And I always like to say bodies should never be trends. But unfortunately, we kind of are back there right now. Like that thinner body is kind of, I hate to say it because, you know, I don't believe it's a trend, but we're seeing a lot of it. So those messages keep getting thrown at us. And then, you know, when we see or hear about somebody getting criticized or shame for gaining weight or not losing weight, quote, fast enough after having a baby, you know, we internalize those messages as, well, something must be wrong with you if you're not able to maintain a quote healthy weight, whatever that is and means to you. So I think because of all the messages that we've been hearing, we internalize them and then we start believing the messages because it's what we keep hearing, right?
Right.
And our bodies, we live in them. We are with them all day, every day. So I think it's really difficult for people to separate their bodies from their worth because it's a part of you. But I like to think of it as reminding yourself of all of the amazing things going on in your life. And put your body aside, because if we were to think of our bodies like we do shoe size, nobody's criticizing, as far as I know, nobody's criticizing somebody for being a size 8 versus a size 7 shoe, right? And we're not trying to change that.
Right.
So I know it's a big shift. And I think the best way to do it is to start getting away from the appearance focus and start looking at what our bodies do for us. So it's actually getting away from what's called body positivity and becoming more body neutral. So thinking about, I love my arms because they allow me to hug my children. I love my legs because they allow me to walk from point A to point B. I love my feet, since we were talking about feet and shoes, because they allow me to stand up, right? If we could start doing that, we actually start appreciating our bodies more for what they do for us than for their appearance. And eventually we become more body acceptance. And I think then we can start also differentiating and getting that self-worth apart from our bodies.
Yeah, I love that. And I read that. I'm not going to tell everything in the book, but that was a favorite part, to pick your body part that you love the most. I'm still thinking about that.
Well, it doesn't have to be the body part you love the most. I actually want to challenge that and maybe say, pick the body part you don't love.
Oh, okay.
And then find an appreciation for it, right? Like, I don't know, if you don't like your arms, be like, all right, you know what? But I can appreciate my arms because they do this for me.
And turn it into something beautiful and positive. How much,
exactly.
How much of our struggle with weight is psychological, do you think?
Well, you know, I think so much in life goes back to our thoughts. Because our thoughts impact how we feel, and that impacts our behaviors, and it's all related. So if we think we can't do something, or if we think we're not good enough, that's going to lead to a feeling, that's going to lead to a behavior. So I think a lot of it has to do with our thoughts, but again, then the behavior follows. So like, they're both important. And for some people, tweaking the thought is easier than tweaking the behavior. For other people, if you are so stuck in the negative spiral thoughts, I say, just do it. Just do the behavior. Try it for 2 minutes. Try it for one day. See how it goes. And what's going to happen is you're going to start building confidence because you see, oh, I could do that. But so much of it is we're stuck because of the mindset.
Yeah. You know, I listened to you on Mel Robbins' podcast, and there was something that you were talking about, the two of you, and I went, my jaw dropped. Like, and no, you all can't see me, but you'll be able to see it on the when we put some clips out. But there was,
I'm
something,
like, oh my gosh, what was it? What did I say?
No, it was something, and I resonated with it. It was about people eat out of stress. They don't even know what they're eating. They don't take the moment to enjoy the food. And I am that, my husband and I are those people that when we're stressed, if we were in the kitchen, we had something going on in our family and stressful last week. And I watched him. He went, he didn't even really realize what he was doing. He went in the fridge. He grabbed something out of there. He didn't even know what he grabbed. He was just eating it. And then I'm picking at it, the two of us. And I said, look at us. I said, I just listened to Dr. Rachel and we are doing exactly what we shouldn't be doing. We are probably consuming 200 or 300, 400 calories just out of stress. But if we take a step back, like you said, and sit down, have an appropriate lunch, take our stress to the table and talk about it and chew our food. I thought that, I mean, it was brilliant. It was textbook Elise and Jerry. That was it.
It's, well, I'm so glad that that resonated and that you found it helpful, because so many people participate in emotional eating. So many. And there's, you know, I don't like to say it's good or bad, you know, like so many people do it. It only becomes problematic if it causes distress or it feels problematic to you. What I mean by that is, if it is your only coping tool, it's problematic. If it's a coping tool you sometimes use and it makes you feel good and you can move on, it's not a big deal. What I often say is it's the thought that follows the behavior that's more important than the behavior itself. What I mean by that is, say you're eating, I don't know, the ice cream out of the ice cream jar container or the cookies, you know, standing up. That's typical emotional eating. It's like you're standing up over the counter. You don't really know what you're eating. You're just eating. You're mindlessly eating to soothe something. Now, if you're doing that and you're able to say afterwards, wow, that was emotional eating. All right, I feel better. I'm going to go out for my walk. I'm going to go on with my day, whatever, and I move on. Then in a way, I don't really care, to be honest. I'm like, go for it if it's not causing you distress. But if you're going to do it and then you're going to feel bad about it afterwards, and then you're going to beat yourself up and be like, I shouldn't have done that. I'm so guilty. That's going to lead to the next behavior of maybe somebody is going to restrict now because they feel guilty that they just ate, say, a box of cookies. So it's the thought that follows. But yes, if the key is, if you can stop in the middle, which it sounds like you did, it can actually be life-changing. It's like, fine. So you're starting to eat emotionally because you're reactive. We all are out of emotion. And then it'd be like, hold on, what am I doing? Why am I standing in the in the kitchen right now? Why am I eating over the counter? Oh, I'm feeling stressed. All right, what can I do instead? Is this helping me? Sometimes, yes. I mean, I've done it. Sometimes I'm like, I'll tell my husband, I am emotionally eating right now. Like, it is what it is. I'm going to have my few bites of ice cream and that's that. Yeah. And I move on. But like, it's fine because I know I'm doing it. I know I'm stressed. I know in the moment it feels good. And that's that. But if you can stop it kind of midway or even prevent it, you'll probably feel better. But also don't try to avoid it completely because it's realistic. It's common. It's fine every once in a while.
Right. And we'll be right back. And we're back. You are here with Stacked with Elise Ryan and Dr. Rachel Goldman, and we are having quite the conversation. We are covering a lot of topics in a short amount of time. We're talking about body image and weight loss and emotional and physical eating. And the next thing I want to tackle in this arena is comparison. Now, I'll just say myself, I am very confident in my I have body image, poor body image, but I'm confident with myself. Does that make sense as a person? But I can look at somebody who's right now walking through the studio and, you know, looks really cute in a pair of jeans and a tucked in blouse. And I say, oh my gosh, now I probably could do that, but I have such poor body image and I don't know how to undo that.
So the comparison is real, right? And it's okay, but it's what we do with the comparison that matters. So for instance, and I love that you just gave that example because I'm going to now put you on the spot. Mm. So as you're sitting there and you see this person walk by that looks adorable or cute in her jeans, what thought did you have? What thought popped up? Maybe the first thought was, wow, they look really cute in their jeans. And then what happened after that?
Okay. The truth is, I'm going to be really honest.
That's what I want. It's the only way it's going to work.
So many of my friends are teeny tiny, adorable. They look so cute. And I look at them and I smile because they look so cute and adorable. And I look at it and I'm so happy for them. And that's an honest thing. Then in my back of my brain, I say to myself, no matter what you do, I work so hard. I work out. I eat right. I do this. I do that. You have to accept that you are not going to look like that. You're not their size. You're not this. You're not that. However, I really dislike when some people say to me, you are what you are, and this is what you're supposed to be, because I don't think I'm at the best I can be. So I struggle with all of that.
Okay. So I like that you're able to acknowledge and be happy for them.
Absolutely.
Assuming they're happy. And then, you know, it's the normal common thing, the human thing to do would be to kind of turn it inward and be like, why can't I look like that? Right. Or what's wrong with me that I can't look so cute in jeans? Mm-hmm. But do you hear it again?
I don't.
Oh,
Dr. Right. Rachel is in New York and she, Dr. Rachel's in New York and she has ambulances going outside her window, but I don't really hear it.
It's like nonstop. I don't know. I'll hear it on the news later.
Okay. Jessica, keep going.
What's that?
I said, we could just keep going because I don't, if they could, they okay. hear them.
Great.
If this is a New York City moment.
If like you hear it. Okay. So the human thing to do would then to turn it inward and be like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do that? And I don't want to say what you said that some friends of you say, kind of like, this is your body, you need to accept it. But what I am going to say is, what if, and I want to know how you feel when I say this, like, this is what I would do in therapy, actually. What if I were to say to you that maybe we need to accept that this is your body today? Today, maybe you can't wear those jeans and look that cute. Although I would challenge that also. And then be like, who says that you can't wear jeans and look cute?
Right.
Like, who says that? Like, do you think that, or is it a fact? Like, examine the evidence. Is there evidence that you can't wear jeans and look cute? Or I'll take it even a step further. Is there evidence, or like the growth mindset, the tweaking? Maybe you don't feel comfortable wearing jeans, but maybe we can find something that you feel amazing and cute in.
Right. That's great.
Right. Like, right. Like, it doesn't have to be the jeans. So in the book, I talk about where, like, what we wear matters.
Right.
Because if we are wearing something that is too tight on us or too loose, that's what we're thinking about the whole time. Right. Like, if you are, like, I'm imagining that, I think the last time I gave this talk, I said to somebody, if you were sitting on stage right now wearing pants or jeans that are too tight, that is the only thing you're going to be able to think about.
Miserable.
What's that?
I'd be miserable.
Right. You'd be miserable. You'd be thinking about, I mean, I'm just imagining, like, right now, like, I'm not wearing jeans that are too tight right now. So, you know, but I would imagine if I was, I would be thinking about the button poking into my stomach and, you know, my skin over the jeans and all these things are just, it's too tight. I wouldn't be able to breathe. And that would take me away from the present. Just like if I wear baggy clothes, for instance, personally, I feel like a schlump. Like, I'm just like, I'm schlumpy today, you know, which is fine. But it puts you in a certain mood, right? Maybe I don't want to do as much because I'm kind of feeling, eh. So I think we have to take a moment and think about, how do I want to feel today? This is where my power pink suits come in. How do I want to feel today? And what makes me feel amazing, right?
Right.
So we need to wear what makes us feel great and what makes us feel confident and good to be able to show up for the best self that we can. And for you, maybe it's not jeans today. I don't know, but I'm just saying that because you brought up jeans.
Right.
Maybe it's not jeans. Can we accept the fact that today, maybe you can't wear jeans and feel great?
Maybe it'll be next week. Maybe it'll be the following week.
Right. We don't know.
Right.
Or your body is not the problem. Maybe it's the jeans. Maybe we go find a new pair of jeans.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess part of the problem is too, you know, if you're a size 8 or something or 10 and you go into a store and you try to buy clothes and some of the designer clothes, it's actually, then I need to be sitting on your couch afterwards. But yeah, it's like, it's true.
I mean, the numbers, they're all over the place, the sizes, right?
Right.
But I like to think of it as the same thing as I talk about with the medications, with bariatric surgery.
Right.
It's not that you failed the medication. It's not that you failed the bariatric surgery. It's not that there's something wrong with you because the genes don't fit.
Right.
There's something wrong with those genes. They're not made for you.
They're just okay. Not made for everybody, right?
Right. Like, luckily, there's lots of different gene brands. That's what I like now about the medications. There's lots of options now. If one doesn't work because you have horrible side effects, there's another one we can try. But we would be so willing to just try another medication, say, but why don't we just try a different pair of genes?
I love that. And I've been doing that. I'm very proud of myself. I'm finding clothes that I love and that feel good on me and that make me feel confident. And that's the best messaging, Dr. Rachel, I think, for everyone, because I have friends of all different shapes and sizes. And, you know, we're not getting any younger and we're trying to have a more, as we mature, we still want to look as good as we can and as youthful as we can, but in a mature sense. So I think it's at each stage, we all have to find what makes us feel good.
Right. We have to find what works for us today. Right. And that might change and that's okay. But for what you need today, I mean, if you need to put the jeans in the back of the closet and forget about them for now, or if you need to go shopping, whatever it is, I think the most important thing is that we wear something that makes us feel good enough.
Right.
Right. Absolutely. And if there's something we can add, like I'll never forget during the pandemic when I started seeing clients virtually, you know, so many times my clients would be like, oh, I'm feeling so lethargic. I'm feeling so this. And I'm like, when's the last time that you put makeup on? When's the last time you put earrings on? What's the last time you put a bracelet on? Right. Things like that. Those little tweaks can actually have a big impact in terms of how we show up. Because then again, the behavior impacts the feeling or the emotion, impacts the thought just the same way as the thought, emotion, behavior. Sometimes it's just putting the bracelet on, putting the heels on, putting the jeans on, whatever it is that makes you feel good.
You know, you said something, and it's so funny because we've been working on our jewelry branding, and you're talking about wear what matters, and we've been saying wear or stack what matters, not in a different thing, like what's meaningful to you, not what feels good, but it's meaningful, like your grandmother's piece or this or that. And I love that. I was written like, oh my gosh, wear what matters. There's something so profound about that statement. It's my new thing I'm going to have over on my wall, because no matter what you're doing, if it feels good to you and it means something to you and you can walk down the street or into a meeting and be happy and confident, that's what matters.
It's so true. You know, as you were saying that, I just remember this conversation I had at one of my book events. And it was funny because we were kind of talking about this and talking about trends. And I had said, I will never forget that one day I was still wearing a certain pair of jeans that were not in style anymore. And I remember a friend saying, Rachel, that is not trendy right now. And I said, I don't care. It feels good on me. Like, I feel great in these jeans. Forget about the trends. I'm going to wear them. And I think it's so important, but we have to be able to show up that way. Like, if you're going to show up, be like, oh, really? It's not, you know, like, you need to feel confident in what you're doing.
Right.
And for me, that's what it was.
Right. And that's important. And one of the quotes, and I'm not giving away your whole book because there's how many pages are in this book? So many.
264.
There was a quote by Theodore Roosevelt that said, comparison is the thief of joy. And that is so true. And I love that. And I think we should all embrace it because it's so difficult not to compare yourself. But if you work hard to just say, you know what, that looks great on her. This looks great on me. And that's what makes the world go round. I know it's easier said than done, but if you can get to that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think being able to say, you know, like that looks great on her and maybe you don't know what works great on you yet and say, you know what, and I'm going to figure it out. Right. Like I want to find something that looks great on me and I feel good in.
Right. And, you know, we're running out of time, but I could talk for hours and hours and hours about this. But, you know, I think that after listening to everything that you have been saying, it's all truly that one word is a mindset. And I'm definitely not a therapist. I don't know what I'm saying, but do you agree that it's the key word here is mindset?
Yeah. And it's because it all boils down to our thoughts. You know, the words we're using when we speak to ourselves actually becomes our reality. And that's why I often say we need to be mindful of the words we're using when we speak to ourselves, because one thought can literally change the course of our day because it impacts how we feel and impacts our behavior. So just kind of shifting a little bit, being a little more kinder to ourselves, shifting our mindset a little bit more towards a growth mindset, I truly believe is life-changing for people.
Yeah, I do. I agree. If, you know, if listeners are listening in right now, when we drop this, not right now, but when we drop the episode, and they were to take away one thing from today, from this conversation, what should it be?
So we gave away a lot of good little nuggets, but I'm going to go back to actually something that I think it's one of the first lines of the book, which is that life is challenging and life can be tough. And it doesn't need to feel as tough with the right tools. So like, if you have this book, let this book be a tool for you. Take the tools that we talked about here and pick one thing that resonated and start integrating it into your life today. Not to wait. There's no perfect time, not to wait, and just accept that there's hard moments and I don't want to minimize that. And we could do things to feel a little bit more in control.
Okay. That's perfect. Absolutely. I love that message. And, you know, where can they find your book? I know Amazon, wherever. Tell everyone where. Because this is going to be a book, once you read it, this is going to be your book that you want to give to everybody at your friends' birthday parties or just at holiday time. It's a treasure. So I don't say that often, but this is a treasure, a real treasure. So
Make me cry.
I have tears because I always have tears that everyone laughs at maybe during podcasts, because I have people with real passion, power, and purpose who are making differences on the show. So when I see that you're doing this and have this incredible book and you're out all over the country changing people's lives, that to me is someone really special. So where can we get your book?
I appreciate that. I feel like I need a tissue. So my book should be available everywhere, more or less, wherever you like to buy your books or your eBooks, and or you can go to whenlifehappensbook.com. If you want to go to your local bookstore and they don't have the book by any chance, you can also just ask them to order it and they'll get it. But it is in most Barnes and Nobles, in the actual store, and then it's online. You know, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Target, Bookshop, your independent bookstores, wherever you want.
And we'll put links up and all her handles also on the podcast. And you're going to laugh when I say this. So when I had Megan Murphy on way in the beginning of when we started the podcast, she said to me, I said, you know, I asked her to give me a word, like what describes her mood right now. And she said, wait, Elise, you're a jewelry designer. If you should say, if I was to design you a bracelet today, what would your word be on the bracelet? So what would your word be?
Well, it's funny because I have a bracelet that says life happens. But I think the word that I need right now, this very moment, I think is grounded.
What? Grounding?
Grounded or pause. It would be one of those.
Grounded.
Because I am in a busy, full season of my life right now. And I need that reminder to just stay grounded right now, which is always me kind of going back to those moments and pausing and breathing.
Well, I love that. Thank you so much. You know, in closing here, I had written a couple notes and I wanted to say, you know, life is going to happen is one of my takeaways. And our bodies change. I'm 59 and they change every couple of years. Just side note here. Plans will shift, but what truly matters is how we show up and how we speak to ourselves and what we choose to carry. And that's what you wear matters. and what it really means. And I want to thank you for coming today. I want to thank you for your wisdom, your knowledge. We are all cheerleading for you and huge fans. And to everyone here who is loving Stacked, big announcement. We have been doing this a little over a year, and we're in the top 5% of all podcasts globally. So I'm pinching myself, but it's because of the support by all our listeners and our amazing guests. And I thank you so much for coming. Dr. Rachel, thank you so much. And if you love this podcast, please listen to anywhere where you listen to your podcast, Apple, Spotify, or wherever, and live your life. Continue each day with power, passion, and purpose. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning into Stacked by Elise Ryan. As a special thank you for being a part of this journey and supporting our stories, I'm giving all of our listeners 20% off at EliseRyanJewelry.com. Use the code STACKED20 at checkout and treat yourself or someone you love to something meaningful, stackable, and stunning. Because when you're stacked with intention, anything is possible. Shop now at EliseRyanJewelry.com and stay stacked. It's excluding charity jewelry.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.